Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a weekly motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. This week, we are brought to you by Working Class Customs, which is a custom fabrication shop out of Northern Utah. You can direct any further questions on that to Cole.
And I'm Cole.
I'm Easton. We are your two favorite hosts, back again for your favorite weekly motorcycle podcast. So, Cole.
Oh, sorry. I'm out of practice.
Oh, you're been gone too long. Where were you last week? Are we going to get into that today? Did we get to know any of the secrets?
Oh, man, I hope we're going to get into that. I did a round with Legion SBK at High Plains Raceway. I'm excited to talk about it.
High Plains, is that?
Colorado.
Oh, man, I was thinking Oklahoma or Australia or something.
It's out in the middle of nowhere. I thought Colorado was full, but it's not. You have to drive, you know, a lot of miles outside of Denver. It's about a mile east or an hour east of Denver, but okay. You get out into the plains, if you will.
So it is in the plains, but
they're in the plains.
High. Are they high plains because of certain things that are legal in Colorado, or are they high because of the elevation?
I think it's a combination for sure.
All right. So more on the high plains to come after the break, and then we got some racing.
We got so much to talk about
all over the world to catch up on, both MotoGP and some sad news. Insert sad music here for the BMW fanboys across the world.
Come on.
It's pretty sad news. I'm being serious about that. I'm not.
It's a messed up. Let's just roll the intro so we can get into that.
Well, intro it is then.
Yesterday at one point, I was in sick.
And we're back. And Josh Benninger, that is how you do that. Although you, man, what a knockoff. I thought I lost my job for sure with that. We're back.
You know, I'm going to be honest. So in the moment, I was like, oh, that's kind of, okay, all right, yeah. And then I was listening to it, and I was like, wait a second. I thought Cole wasn't here. And then I realized it was him. He did a pretty good job.
He did a great job. That was a fun podcast. Thanks for doing that, guys. It was quite interesting for me to be on the other side listening to.
Without being part of it.
Yeah, it was good stuff. I liked it a lot.
Well, good. We definitely missed you over here. Not planning on doing that too often, but, you know, sometimes there's racing to be had and still podcasting to be done. So
life happens.
Yeah, life. Life happens.
Hey, life I know. Happens. Check out my shirt. I mean, I don't really love my shirt, but I had
Ride
to wear
it. Ride Fatter.
Ride Fatter. So I'm going to show you, but yeah. You got to read it for the people that aren't actually watching. I promised somebody I would wear this shirt. So
ride faster, suck less. Legion Moto. All right. Ride faster, suck less. Okay, brought to so you this week by Legion. Is that a rider tip for the week?
Well, I hope you got a better one than that because, you know, I don't know. This one works for me on some days. Usually days ending in Y.
Some days you got to keep it simple and just ride faster and suck less. Some days you might need an actual tip, and we do have a tip for you guys this week. Are we ready for it?
We're ready.
All right. Well, this week's weekly riding tip is brought to you by Benninger Motorsports, which is private coaching that builds solid riders through vision-based training. Link to Benninger Motorsports is down in the description. But here we have the tip. And I want to specify, I think this tip is not necessarily built for racing before, Cole, you get all worked up about it. Maybe built for while you're out there doing some training during a track day or something similar. But without further ado, we'll get into the tip. Learn to manage traffic. Getting stuck behind a group of slower, less skilled riders can be frustrating. Working your way through them is not always the answer, especially if they're not predictable. Chill out on the straights and let them pin it to let those riders get further ahead. Then you'll have space to work on your cornering. Or come in hot pit. Let the marshal know you're looking for space and they will send you back out when the coast is clear. It's a little bit shorter tip. I know Josh is, he's very busy in down at COTA this weekend. But, you know, I thought that was an interesting tip, and definitely when I first read it, I had racing on the mind. I was like, hold up, Josh. I'm not going to just let everyone go on the straight in a race. What are you talking about? And then I kind of read the whole thing. I was like, oh, okay. I see. We were talking about when you're out doing some training, you're out doing some track days. We do specialize in track days and club racing. And I think it's a good tip.
No, it's definitely a good tip. When you said it wasn't necessarily race related and you started with the, you know, that's one of the most important skills is learning how to get through those people.
True. Yeah. But once you start racing, and maybe, you know, maybe Josh will have the follow up for racing and managing traffic during a race for next week. Once you get into racing, managing traffic in a race, you know, we talked about race lines versus riding lines, and how once you're racing your lines, you know, they might not be what they look like before, because that might be the fastest line for that scenario with the guy in front of you or the guy behind you or whatever else. Or maybe you're trying to close the passing lane before someone else comes up because, you know, they're just a little bit faster than you in that area, but you got them the rest of the track, so you don't want to let them take advantage of that. Those lines can change, but I appreciate the tip because it's simple, it's to the point. And when you are out on a track day, there are definitely times where you want to just go carving through everyone. And I think what he was getting at is just, you know, it's not worth it. If you're out there to test and tune and to work on certain things, focus on working on those things. You need to clear the space around you. You say, I'm out here to work on 5, 6, and 7. I know that's Fred. I know I struggle with this track on that, or I know that that's a certain type of corner that I struggle everywhere, so I really want to work on those. You don't have to set a wicked fast lap time to do that. You don't have to pass everyone to get out there and do that. You can go out where the track's open and stay where the track's open and then get some good work in those corners. So,
fair enough.
There you go. There is this week's riding tip. Once again, brought to you by Benninger Motorsports. Check them out down in the description. The link will be down there. Also, go follow them on Facebook, Instagram. A lot of great private coaching done down at MSRH. We are going to check that out later this year in November and get some actual data for you guys, our listeners and viewers on YouTube, to figure out just how good Josh's training really is and put him to the test. So if you're looking to do that before us, go hit him up, or afterward, I'm sure we'll still be getting some good riding tips. So without further ado, moving forward. Into
Thank you.
Yes, sorry. Thank you. where would you like to start off, Cole? We talking Colorado, or do we need to freaking
unwrap
MotoGP? There's a lot to unwrap, and we don't have. I think you missed a week, so we got 2 weeks of MotoGP. Got a little bit of World Superbike, and during that week that you missed, you were busy doing a whole bunch of stuff. So we got a lot to talk about, and we don't have a whole lot of time to do it. So we got to get our fast voices on, and good luck keeping up with us today. Well, if you're listening, buckle your seatbelt, strap in, let's go.
Well, if you start with fantasy, then we'll start talking about MotoGP. So let's start with Colorado.
All right, Colorado it is. If you're here for fantasy, I don't know when we'll get into it, but skip ahead to that.
Hold, please. High Plains Raceway.
Hi. Plains Raceway. How are you doing?
So, what an experience. So, I know that one of your favorite things is learning the nuances of a track, mm-hmm. or a track day organization, or in this case, a racing organization and a track day organization. So I went out and did a track day with HPR. High Plains Raceway does it just a little bit different. The track ownership actually does the open lapping days, the track days.
Okay. Is that like a membership track, or that's just how that track does it?
That's just how that track does it. I think it's owned by a conglomerate.
Okay.
There's a few different people. So they actually have in-house employees to run the track, to flag the track, to do all those things. So the motorcycle track day was actually put on by the track.
Okay. Interesting. I don't think I've ever been to one of those. That I know of, anyway. Not that, like, spoke obviously to me about it.
So I had the opportunity to do the track day with HPR on Friday. Mm-hmm. And it was 2 days for Legion SBK. And then Legion SBK actually had their own track day there. So that is possible. I mean, track organizations can rent the track to do their own track days. But they had one on Monday. I didn't have the time to stay for that. I can't really speak on that, although I do have some comments. So let's start with the track day, though.
Okay.
The track day, some of the nuances, at least to me, mm-hmm. were it was two groups, fast and slow.
Okay.
I don't know if that's how they do it every time, but this particular round was fast and slow.
Mm-hmm.
So we signed up for the fast group.
And 30-minute sessions?
30-minute sessions.
Okay.
It was great. It sounded like one of the disheartening things to hear was, and maybe it had something to do with their Legion track day being on Monday coming up, mm-hmm. but the numbers were somewhat light, which is a great thing in the moment for you, but
yeah,
not necessarily for the track's financial ability to keep doing those things. So,
right.
So it was a little light. There wasn't a ton of people out there. And for that reason, the track said, hey, we're going to do groups until 9, and then we're just going to open it up. You ride whenever you want to ride.
Until 9?
So 9 a.m. So we went and did the first session as groups.
Okay, so you started at 8.
Yep.
Wow. So okay.
First session was fast and then slow, and then after 9, they just said, track is yours. So the only time they stopped was at the top of each hour.
Mm-hmm.
They would stop and let the corner workers, you know, have a bathroom break or sandwich break or whatever they needed. And got to ride as much as you wanted to ride.
Okay. So, I mean, we've done that before on one occasion. Did you find it better or worse this time?
So there were factors of that that were awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And we might go back to Josh's riding tip just a little bit here, but I'll get into the track here in a second for those that haven't been to that track, but when you mix the groups like that, you inevitably have, you know, a 14-year-old on a KTM 390 doing their first track day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm in a competition with friends to see who can break 170 on the back straight.
Yeah. 390s don't quite, I don't know if it matters how good you are. I don't think you're quite doing it.
Yeah. So it
buck 70.
So some of that became interesting, and that's where Josh's tip comes in, right? But when it's 20 seconds, when it's 20 seconds a lap, 30 seconds a lap difference.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to
run back into those people again on the next round.
Right. So,
but talk about the track a little bit. The mm-hmm. track is amazing. It has a ton of elevation. It has about everything you can imagine. There's two blind corners.
Okay.
There's a straightaway that it's whoever has the most, you know what, at the end of the straight, because there's a fairly hard swooping right at the end of it.
Okay.
And your braking markers start at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And the challenge was to force yourself to hold it to the 5.
Rough. Wow.
So,
and then think about the superbike riders that are still holding it till the 3. They're like, yeah, normally I break at the 2.5, but you know.
So it's crazy. Oh, yeah. There's two first gear corners on that track.
Okay.
So you've got some absolute gung-ho, you know, balls of the wall type speeds, big swooping corners, fast corners, and then
all the way down to
there's, like I said, two first gear corners, but the elevation, there's two separate carousels on that track that are both downhill.
Okay.
One of them is coming back onto the straightaway mm-hmm. and the finish line. It's a hard, hard left. And then down basically a waterfall, right? I mean, it's quite reminiscent of, you know, the ridge
mm-hmm.
without quite the elevation. It's maybe half that as far as elevation, but
in that specific area, because You mentioned, you know, I only ask because the name of the track is High Plains. And so I get that high means high in elevation or other things. But the plains generally would mean it's like high in elevation, but you get a nice flat prairie up there.
Yeah.
So when it's you mentioned there's a lot of elevation, I was like, okay, interesting.
Yeah, it's just some rolling hills. Just some big, very gradual rolling hills that the tracks build on. And so you're up, you're down.
Okay. Just kind of all over.
Like I say, there's a couple of them that are steep enough that you're literally blind coming up over the top. Yeah. It's just insane. And I gotta talk about rider lines just because I thought of it earlier after the tip. But when you're talking about riding lines, the further I get, the further I progress in this sport, the crazier it becomes to me. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I say it all the time. I don't know how many times I've said it on here, but when you ask somebody what the line is, it depends on how fast you're going.
It's true.
Yeah. So I was out there with Anthony Lugnut Norton, mm-hmm. and Chris Elliott is a local out there.
Okay. Yeah.
So shout out to Chris. I got to tell his story again, but Chris is very, very fast there. That's considered his home track. He's very good there, and he's moved up to 1,000. He's been
okay.
Been spending a lot of time on 1,000 this year. And I got the opportunity. There's a spot at that track. You come out of a first gear corner.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little straightaway, and then it's back up a hill. Quite a bit of elevation, but it's a swooping right up the hill.
Okay.
It's blind at the top, and then there's a little teeny short straightaway at the top of the hill, and you're back to a first gear hard left. And it is a first gear, like, all the brakes. All the brakes diving in there. You almost come to a stop.
Okay. Were you guys, you're running the full course? Sorry, I just looked up a map because I'm trying to imagine where you're at, and I'm just, wow. Have you seen the logo for Isle of Man? You know, the three legs? Similar? That's what the track looks like. If you're listening and you're at home or you got a phone available or whatever, look up a track map real quick. You'll see what I'm saying. Or maybe we can, if you're watching, we'll have one pop on the screen real quick.
So back to my, you know, the lines are all dictated by how fast you're going. That as speeds increase, those lines change.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard just to tell somebody this is the line if they're going 20 miles an hour and you're going 80 miles an hour.
Right.
That was very evident when on that Friday, on the track day, I take that back. This was Saturday in a warm-up session. Doesn't matter. I knew Chris was behind me. Chris passed me right before that hill.
Okay.
Now, me and Anthony had been talking about it earlier, and he was just explaining the feelings he was going through and where he is on gears. You know, we're just bouncing things off of each other, trying to get faster.
Right.
And when we come up that swooping hill, I mentioned there's a straight.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking at the track there, 1, 2, I don't have the track in front of me, sorry.
Turn three.
5, 6. We're talking 7 and 8, maybe.
Okay. So 6 is a pretty sharp right, decreasing. 7's a long, kind of bendy right. And then 8's a hard left.
Okay. So 7 is up a hill.
Okay, got it.
So, Chris passes me on the little straight before going up that hill.
Okay, so between 6 and 7, okay.
Yeah, there was a bike about 20 feet in front of me. Hold on. I got sidetracked. Earlier in the day, we were talking about how I'm treating that, just the speed that I'm going,
mm-hmm.
I treat that at the top of the hill as a straight. Like, I'm back under the bubble for okay. just a second.
Yep. Yep.
But the guys like Anthony that are going faster, they never stop turning. So okay. they come over the top of that hill and the straight's so short that they haven't finished. They haven't got out of their lean for the hill before they're leaning the other way. So think MotoGP when sometimes they stick their leg out and it looks weird because the leg's actually uphill, like it's going the opposite way as they're leaning.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like they're freaking shooting their legs straight up in the air.
Yes. That scenario right there.
Okay. All right.
But for me, I stand the bike back up. I'm under the bubble for a split second, and then I'm hard brake but that's just that difference in speed right there. They're still flying sideways. You know, they're still leaned over and they are already on the brakes before they start leaning for that next corner.
Right.
Anyway, it was crazy to see. It was crazy to watch. But I had the pleasure of being behind Kreese at one point. He passed me going on the straight before that. We fly up that, and I'm, you know me, I'm going to latch on as hard as I can. And so I fly up the hill. There had been a bike like 20 feet ahead of me. Well, as he shoots over the top of this hill, that guy's more my speed. That guy's treating it like a straight. Kreese sticks his leg out, and it does the whole MotoGP thing. The leg's up in the air like on a weird angle. It's totally the wrong way.
Yeah.
He starts to lean over into the other one, and he backs that bike in front of the other guy. He passes him in the most fluid, sweet motion. The whole bike is just sideways with his leg out on the ground, just slides it in front of the guy, and first gear corner takes off again.
Jeez. And
it was awesome to see. I already told him it was awesome to see, so I don't want to go too far to his head. But
yeah,
it was fun. It was neat to see. But after that corner, you can see there's a carousel or a...
Yeah, it looks like a little bit of a kink, 9A, 9B, slight right, 10, and then a big long right for 11.
That's back down a hill.
Okay. That's
back down a sharp hill. So you're going through those down a pretty good elevation. And that hard right at the bottom, that is going transitioning from downhill to flat through that corner.
Okay.
So you slide in the bike sideways through that one. And then the next one coming up, another hard right. That is absolutely back uphill again, hard.
Interesting.
A lot of elevation change there.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That makes it, you know, growing up, I didn't know anything about racing really beyond like I'd seen some NASCAR and you never get a feel for the elevation unless you go like walk the track and then ride it. Right. If you're riding it, obviously you see it, driving it, whatever. If you walk it, you'll see it beforehand. But like videos never do that justice. Pictures don't do it justice. Even, you know, I see your little tiny 3D printed maps back there. I don't think those even really like, whatever. It is insane how much elevation there can be. And then it's even more insane to me, like how much more fun that makes it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought, you know, growing up and thinking about riding and all that stuff, like I wouldn't have thought that that made it more fun. You know, you take like rider courses and they talk about like, all right, come into a stop when you're up a hill or down a hill. You hit a racetrack and it's like, yeah, hey, good luck. Have fun. And it's freaking awesome. Elevation changes the game. That could definitely make or break a track. So.
Okay. So we're going to get back to the stuff you like. So we got kind of a lay of the land. This is the track. Okay.
Yep. Cool.
And I'll put myself out there. My first lap ever on that track was a 218.
Okay.
The track is 2.5 miles long, whereas most of the ones that we end up running are 2.25.
Yeah.
So the track's just a hair longer. But I went from 218 to really quickly 2.
Yeah.
And I hesitated at the twos. I was struggling to get under a 2. I was, you know, 2 flats, 201s, 2 flats, 201s, struggling for half the day. And then it started breaking through again. We went at 159s, 158s, 157s. And I kind of got stuck at a 157 for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And I think I finished Friday. My PR was a 157. I'd run a handful of them.
Okay. And that was all Friday?
That was all Friday.
Okay.
And so that was the track day. Some things I want to mention that, because this is the stuff you like. So that track does have the LED lights at every tower.
Okay. Yeah.
So they didn't have to have a flagger in every tower. They could communicate with you.
Right.
So the driver's meeting was a little rough. They're pretty serious about their, about the rider meeting. And this is HPR.
Yep.
Not okay. Leader. This is HPR. So in the rider meeting, I will give them all the kudos in the world. They had a TV screen. When they would talk about something, it would bring up an actual live picture of the track of that corner.
Okay.
Say, don't do this here. Don't do this there. They had a lot of like some animations and everything like that. And then for the life of me, I was trying to remember before this, but they gave us three reasons you can be removed from the track. They said, the most important thing you'll hear today, there's three reasons you're done. One, if you cheat and take an extra lap at the end of your session.
Pretty hard when you don't have a session, but okay.
Yeah, I know. But they just said, you're done. We'll just remove you from the track. No excuses, no nothing. And the reason they can say that is they have those LEDs in every corner. There's like 15 corner stations, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they pick a bike. They don't care what bike. They just pick a bike and they turn the checkers on. And that guy's going to see it 15 times in theory. And they'll watch. Every single bike will get it 15 times. Okay. So their take on that is if you blow it, after doing that, knowing that they put it to you 15 times, then you don't deserve to be there and you're gone.
That's pretty fair. I'll give them that. If the if there's literally a light in every corner, like, yep, okay.
The other one, you know, when you're in high school and maybe you took your driver's ed and they tried to show you like pictures of people's eyeballs hanging out of their head and stuff to scare you out of. You remember that day in driver's ed? I don't know. In my driver's ed, at least, they were like.
I'm thinking more of my shop class. We had a video of a guy's eye getting surgery.
They're like,
pull metal shards out.
Well, back in my day when I was in driver's ed, there was at least one video that was like, Sally decided not to wear her seatbelt. And then it would show her like all destroyed on the road or whatever.
This is why you don't street race. Yeah.
Well, they kind of had a moment like that in the driver's meeting that was interesting to me, but there's a white line painted for getting off, for exiting the track.
Yep. Okay.
So exiting the track, you kind of got to come, you're going downhill through that waterfall type thing.
Yeah.
So okay. It's a little rough to have an arm out or a leg out or whatever. So They want you to put it out way before that, of course, on the straight leading up to it.
Yep.
If you miss that, if you put an arm out and then don't come off, you're done. And if you cross the white line that's painted on the track, you're done. And then they proceeded to show a video of some poor dude getting wiped out however many years ago. I don't know. But somebody chose to get off the track in front of him.
Yeah.
And cut across his line. And apparently he'll never ride a motorcycle again. And so they're using that video in their riders meeting showing why. Okay. So it was a little driver's ed-ish.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. All right.
But so that was great. So they had a nice PA system there. They communicated quite a bit over the PA. You could hear it. So as things changed on the track, you know, if there was crashes and they had cleared the track, it was all good. It was all good. So now let's move into Legion SBK to keep this moving along.
All right. Racing.
Kinda.
Okay. So not where I expected that to go.
Well, I've been calling it two-day racing.
Yeah.
The schedule, you know, I didn't look too close at the schedule. I knew I'd signed up for some races, whatever.
Yeah.
Saturday was practice all day. You had four practices. So basically four sessions, four practices. And then they qualify for every class, which I'm a huge advocate for. But they qualify for every class. And they did that in the afternoon. So basically I had three sessions in the morning. You went to lunch, you came back, had one more practice session, and then you qualified. And there was no actual racing on Saturday.
Interesting. Okay.
So it was a long day. I mean, it is what it is. I could have rethought some of that. It's like another track day, right? With a qualifying at the end.
Yeah.
So That was great. The riders meeting was done by Legion SBK. The writer's meeting was awesome. It was to the point. It was, you got any questions? Let's get at it. But here's some of, oh man, I left something out. I got to go back to Friday.
Oh my goodness.
Dude, these lights. These lights allow you to do whatever you want, right? So you could have a pink dinosaur dancing on the board if you wanted to.
That'd be interesting. Yeah.
Just because you can doesn't always mean you should. But in this case, they had police lights. So
what is that, like if you're breaking the law, or is that where the high plane racing comes in?
They called it a police light. They called it a police light, and I got to see it one time. So it's a blue and a red together.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And blue and red is basically what we would consider a red flag.
Okay. So they're about to run
the police lights, finish your lap, get off the track, whatever.
Yeah.
The red flag is 20%. It's not get off the track as soon as you can. It's 20%. They will roll an ambulance while you're on the track.
And you keep riding?
No, you come off at the end of the lap, but they roll the ambulance as soon as the accident happens. If they think they need it, the red light comes on, you go to 20% because they're going to allow that ambulance to pass you on track if needed.
Man, you've seen it all.
Oh, yeah.
You've seen get off the track, you've seen pull off, or you've seen stop on the track right there.
Oh, yeah. In the leader. So one of their sponsors is Audi Denver,
mm-hmm.
and they've got a Audi R8 that runs like their safety car laps.
Okay.
And it follows you on your first lap.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, just in the writers meeting, they said, just be aware if you crash on the first lap and you're laying out there waiting for medical and the safety car doesn't stop, it's not the actual ambulance. It's going to keep going.
It's just a sponsor car. Oh, man. Who's the lucky guy that gets to drive the R8 around? Anyway, yeah, we're not here for cars. Cars are dumb.
Yes. So back to Legion. So we do the Saturday. You get your qualifying. We go home. It was a great day. I brought her down to a 155.2.
Okay. All right.
So that was the goal for the weekend that was given to me. So I achieved said goal. Still had to wear this shirt, but there's a story there.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll leave it for another day. So here's some interesting things I thought you'd find interesting. So I've never been there. So you know how I am. I've been accused of being a planner this weekend by some people because I need to know what's going on. I don't like winging it, right?
Yeah.
I needed to walk out there and see how the cones were, where I needed to line up, what it looked like. And, you know, some people are a little more like, figure it out when we get there.
Right.
But I at least want to have a plan going in. I want to know what I'm going to see. I don't want to see it for the first time when I pull up there, these kind of things. So I wanted to know what the grid was. And I couldn't figure out the grid. And I'm walking around the pits counting yellow numbers because I don't even know how many people are there, you know, for the race. Yeah. And it turns out they do it. I didn't know what to think when I first heard it. And now I am absolutely in love with it. So anybody that's listening, I think this is the way we should all do it. I qualified sixth.
Yesterday at one point, I was in sixth.
Overall.
Okay.
So I have a yellow number on my bike.
Correct.
There are people with white numbers on their bike.
Mm-hmm.
There was no two-wave starts. You start where you qualify. It doesn't matter what your number color is.
Okay.
So if you're the fastest dude out there and you got a yellow number on it, you're starting number one. Fine. And what a glorious idea. I don't know how many people do it. This is the first time I've encountered it. If you guys have seen it before, then, you know, hit us in the comments. That's the first time I had seen that. And it's awesome because a lot of times you go to track and you hear people are sandbagging or they won't, you know, all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what reason is there to sandbag when you got to race everybody anyway?
Yeah, that's pretty good. So
they
when
still,
you when they you still finish
separately,
yeah. So when you're finishing, like if you finish first, and can you win an expert and novice championship at the same time?
I wanted to because I actually one of the classes I could have. Anyway, I thought that was very neat. I thought that was a good way to do it. And why wouldn't you? I mean, after at first hearing it, I thought, well, that's weird. But then when I did it, I said, well, why wouldn't you? If I was the sixth fastest at the track in that class on that day, I'm not trying to say anything, but that particular class that day, I was sixth.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you start sixth? Why put me in the back and make me have to fight through people that are slower, regardless of the color of the number?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, and I guess it depends on grid size and everything else, but I could see an argument for both ways, but I agree with you. Why not?
Why not? I mean, if it's your first race on a yellow number and maybe you're going to qualify in the back, and so fine, you're just in the back anyway, and it's actually safer because if you have to start, you're less likely to get lapped. It's less likely that the the lead guy is going to have to deal with back markers because you got to start at the same time as them.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, take the opposite. You get an expert racer. Maybe he took a year off, or maybe he just had a bad day and he didn't qualify so good. He's not sitting there making it kind of weird and awkward for some of the faster guys in the second wave.
Yep.
Just going to be in the back. So, yeah, I could see that. I agree with you on that one. I think that's a good idea. I do like, too, if you guys have a club somewhere that also does that that isn't Legion, leave us a comment. Curious to see if there's any others now.
Yeah, it was cool. So I like that. The awards,
mm-hmm.
they set aside, like, the top class in 1,000, the top class in middleweight, the top class in lightweight. Yep. Those all had, rather than the medal, those all had an actual plaque or a trophy. Okay. And then all the other classes had medals. But they did some little things, like a novice medal had a different color. What's the band?
Yeah.
The strap? The
band is what I would call it. Necklace part.
Yeah, it was a different color to distinguish that was a novice one and this is an expert one, and some little things like that they did to make the whole trophy part more exciting.
Yeah.
But while I'm talking about trophies, shout out to Coop. Shout out to his team. They had a podium celebration at the end of Sunday.
Okay.
And the podium celebration was not just for one class or whatever. It was the top classes for each group of bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And they stood on the steps. They let the riders speak in the proper order, like a professional event would, like what you would see at a Moto America or what you would see. They had champagne. They sprayed the crowd. People stayed around for that.
All right. All right. Nice and professional.
Yeah. And it was refreshing. It was cool. I had a lot of people there from the area
mm-hmm.
that were experiencing their first motorcycle race. And so they don't know any different, but if they go somewhere else with me now, they're going to be let down.
Got to ease them back into the rest of the world. Well, hey, you know, if you're listening and you got any say in what your club does and your club isn't doing something like that, you know, it makes a difference.
Yeah.
It's club racing. It doesn't need to be everything, but the closer we can get while still maintaining the club racing cost, do it. Makes it awesome. So that's cool.
Yeah. And last thing before we leave that, you've seen my pictures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I raced 4 races out there. I got a 3rd.
Okay.
In this order. Okay. I got a 3rd. Mm-hmm. Then I got a crash.
Okay.
And then I got 2 firsts.
There you go.
And the only reason I brought that up is I would do that crash again tomorrow intentionally for the memories that came from that. So here's my story. Put the bike down. It was the slowest crash anybody could have ever had. Again, it was in the basically the stock 1000 class. Mm-hmm. I was starting in 7th actually for that group. And okay. I had a terrific launch.
Finally figured it out.
I figured it out. I had a terrible launch in the first one. I killed it in front of the people that were there to see me.
Oof.
On the line, started dead last. That first one that I got 3rd, oh, man, that was rough. I was watching them go through turn 1 while I was still trying to find the start button. So it took some work to get back.
Props to you for that. That's pretty good.
But race 2, I had an awesome launch. Awesome launch. I mean, I was right up there. At one point, I was in 2nd. I let 2 bikes stick me in the first corner. Tricky, tricky first corner. It won't happen again. But I had 2 bikes stick me right there. So then I was, you know, back. But I was up there, and we were leaving everybody else behind. I was up there with the leading edge guys.
Right.
And so on lap 2, I wasn't thinking about the right things. I was just being overambitious. I was already imagining myself on the podium with my friend.
Ooh, and boy.
and I went through the first gear corner and got a little overambitious trying to pass somebody and just lost it like 10 miles an hour. But it was enough that when I went down, the bike slid out, low side. When I went down, the peg dug in. I was on one side of the track. My bike drove itself all the way across the track on its side kind of launched itself down in the grass and then killed. So I knew the bike was shut off, but I was on the opposite side of the track. And
so you're just sitting there like,
you know, you want to run over there. They don't allow you to pick up your bike.
Okay.
So I knew I couldn't do that. I knew the bike was off. It was fine. But I really thought they were going to red flag it because the tail on my bike was sticking over the apex.
Oof.
And they didn't. Huh. So I watched everybody come through the corner and like kind of stand up for, you know, for a full 8 laps.
Wow. Yeah.
But Anthony came down the hill after winning the race. Anthony come down the hill and he's screaming at me, "Get over here!" So I ran across the grass and I jumped on the back of his bike and we did a parade lap together. And we were waving at the cameras and just I know it sounds stupid, but just kind of the memories from that was all worth the crash in my mind. It was a good time.
I'm glad you'll remember forever fun boying it on the back of Lugnut's bike. That's good.
It was funny. I learned something else too. You know, I ride two up quite a bit with my wife.
Yep.
And you know, they have a job back there. Yeah. You know, they need to like not make too many sudden movements when you're canyon carving, and they need to lean or whatever. But would you believe I forgot that? I've never been on the back of a bike before. And we got about halfway through there and, you know, old Anthony, he was working pretty hard. I mean, we were just on a cool down lap, but you know, it would have beat anybody in C group. Yeah. And we're cruising along. And I was just sitting upright, like waving at everybody. And then I thought, you know what? I ought to help him through the corners. And so I kind of lean a little bit because we're going fairly quick.
Yeah.
And when we got back, I said, "Man, sorry. I realized I probably should have been helping you lean." And he goes, "Yeah, I know exactly when you realize that."
It is crazy how much of a difference that makes. I'm sure many of you had had someone on the back of the bike before, but I was a pretty new rider back when I had my wife on the back with me. And I just remember one time I just felt the whole freaking bike move to the right and I hadn't moved at all. And so I looked back, I'm like, "What are you doing?" And her head had shifted from one side to the other. Right. She was like, "Well, I wanted to look that way." She just moved her helmet to the other side of my head. And I was like, "Well, don't freaking do that ever again. That's not okay." So after a while you get more used to it, you can kind of, you know, relax a little bit, but especially on a sport bike, I don't know if it's where they sit, if it's how, you know, you sit so much higher. Anyway, we don't need to go into passenger riding on a sport bike. That's not what we're here for. We don't specialize in, well, maybe you do now. I don't know.
But I'm an expert passenger.
There you go. Well, so sweet.
So real quick before we leave there, I just want to say it sounds like the Colorado area. I mean, there's some other racing groups up there as well.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like they've had kind of a rough year for attendance. Talking to some of the guys, you know, Utah, I get stuck in my own little world, right? And Utah is not famous for putting 1,000 people on the track, you know?
Yeah.
But they've had a pretty good year. I mean, things have been fine. I mean, we're still quite positive and we wish there was more. Come on out. But it's up there with traditional numbers and, you know.
Yep.
But it was a little disheartening hearing that all these clubs are kind of struggling because there was 3 or 4 different clubs that were being brought up that have had poor attendance numbers this year because of the economy is what they're – and I get that. I get that. But this was Legion SBK's inaugural year, and they ran into a lot of hiccups.
Yeah.
They canceled our round in Utah. Shortly after this round at High Plains, they canceled their last round. So I think they were scheduled for a 5, maybe a 6. They've canceled 3 rounds.
Wow.
So, and my understanding is it's due to attendance.
Yeah. They just don't have the people to.
So I just want to say my experience with Legion SBK. Thank you, Cooper. It was awesome. I thought it was a well put on show. The communication was great. As good or better than I've been associated with anywhere
it
else.
It has to be decent enough. You're wearing the shirt, you know.
Yeah, I'm wearing the shirt. So hopefully they get everything worked out. Hopefully the economy comes back. Hopefully everything gets cooking. But I'm hoping for great things for you guys. I'd like to come race at least one more round next year. Stick in there. We appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah, and just a hint into the up and coming, I think here in the next few weeks, we will have an episode centered around traveling. We'll put it that way. Traveling with a motorcycle. And we're going to try and hit both sides of that. So the goal would be to talk about our experiences traveling, both for track days and for racing. I know, Cole, you've done quite a bit of that. Both of us have traveled cross-country in multiple different ways to do it. And maybe we can talk a certain guest host into joining us since he's been kind of the king of traveling this past year. But at least we'll get a good episode going and also have some data from some of the viewers, listeners, other riders and racers and what everyone reasons to and reasons not. So you can plan on that in your future
You
subscribe to the channel down below. Or just keep listening. Either way.
All right. Can we get into WSBK?
I don't know if we have time for WSBK. That's your call.
Yes, we do.
All right. Let's get into it.
Let me just say, you hinted earlier.
I did.
Poor Top Rack.
I'm not excited about that news. I'm not trying to poke fun. We try and keep the podcast light. Try not to bring on bad news here and there. This sport is dangerous, and sometimes things happen. If you haven't seen what happened to him, don't show your kids. That was
scary,
a rough one.
Yeah,
it was a rough one. When I was watching the video at first, and he first went down, I was like, "What is everyone freaking out about?" Because there's a decent amount of time where it doesn't look like it's going to be that bad. And then there's a very certain instant where you're like, "Oh, okay, yeah. There it is." That's
what the hell is that wall doing there?
I don't know. That was the other thing I was thinking. I was like, "This is not the Isle of Man. This is not Irish road racing. This is a racetrack. Let's freaking air fence something." I don't know.
I mean, yeah, that could have been a lot worse. I'm glad it wasn't. He's still going to win the championship.
Okay.
But let me just say that, more importantly, that happened. So now the Ducatis are going to reign supreme. BMW's nowhere. They've lost their man for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
That happened during practice or qualifying, right? So, happened the first day. Anyway, once you know, those BMWs ended up qualifying, I think, first, third, and fourth. Or first, fourth, and fifth. The remaining BMWs.
Yeah.
We had a crazy race before anybody yells at me. We had a crazy race that had weather involved. So I know people don't get the same credit for a rain race as they would for a dry race. But Mr. Vandermark on a BMW, Top Rack's teammate, got the win in bad weather.
There you go.
And yeah.
Unfortunately, the T Resgit is not at the top of all of them anymore, but you are correct.
So BMW still gets the win in race one. We go to race two, or the Super Pole race.
Mm-hmm.
And your favorite?
The Beluga Whale.
The Beluga Whale. You know, Top Rack's not there to beat him. You know, there you go. But the only people with any snowball's chance in hell of touching Top Rack are the Beluga Whale and Batista.
Mm-hmm.
Batista crashes out of the first race. Excuse me. Beluga crashes out of the first race, so no points scored.
Okay. Batista out of the second one?
Yep. So, okay. And Beluga wins the Super Pole and the second race. But yep. Your turn for the drum roll.
I don't know if it'll pick it up. My mic's not that good.
It's good. I can hear it. Garrett freaking Gerloff.
Yeah, coming in third place, race two. That is an American flag. I'm looking at it. For those of you that listen that aren't from America, sorry, we're going to take our parade, celebrations, everything else. We have an American. on, what are they, is that still the podium? I always get, yeah, on the podium. Not the pole position, but the podium.
He got to speak, and he said, he made some comments like, because he got fired. He's going to Kawasaki next year.
That's right. Yeah, he's not.
And so he said, man, I feel like we're just starting to get our stride. It's too bad that they fired me or whatever, and I love this team and the bike, and thank you, BMW. But anyway, so we had a BMW on the podium. Podium's all around, even without Toprak being there, so it's a good track for them. World Superbike is awesome. I can bring up my better half has said on multiple occasions at this point, she is more into WSBK than she is the MotoGP at this point.
Interesting. Okay.
We look so forward to those races.
Okay. And
it's because they have headlights. They look like motorcycles.
Yeah, they're real.
They're real motorcycles.
You could go buy one tomorrow. Yeah.
Kinda. Yeah. You could go buy one and tell your friends it was just like them.
Yeah. People that don't know, don't know. And you look into the difference, you're like, oh, stock, super bike. Yeah. Where's the BMW in there?
So if you're still there, I think Toprak leaves the weekend still up by 50 points in the championship.
Yeah, 310 to 365, so 55 points.
Yeah, this is and in Superbike, in World Superbike, you have two races and a Super Pole, so they can do 62 points a weekend. So okay. He's not, if he misses 12. Another weekend and the Blue Goel won everything, he could technically take the championship from him, but Toprak will be back even if he has to put a bicycle pump on his collapsed lung, and I would think he'll be back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I imagine he'll fight to come back, that's for sure. I was hoping you had some news on that, but I guess we'll wait and see. So
He was at the track. When Vandermark won the race, he looked happy to be there. He didn't look physically happy to be there. Okay. And they were being very careful not to let anybody get close enough to really touch him.
Yeah.
Because he was pretty guarding. He was guarding that side, but he made an appearance and he sat in the chair during the whole race in the garage. So he was there supporting.
Okay. Well, that's good news. I mean, seeing someone up that quickly after means probably on the road to recovery. How long the recovery is, we'll keep you guys updated. Cole will. I don't follow World Superbike as closely as he does because there's so much news to follow.
Because it's awesome.
I should. But we got to get into – we got to keep moving this.
You better start with fantasy.
We will start with fantasy. And since last week we missed it, I do not have the points for last week. But I do know that last week's winner was Duke, who's currently holding down third place. Hit us up on Instagram to collect your prize. This week's winner for the most points
is me.
Just about. You are in second place, but you are, in fact, still behind.
Damn.
Triple Three Racing. So, Triple Three Racing holding down first place. 170.5 points. Next closest to you is Colt, 158.5. And then there were a couple of people scoring 156, actually. So, they must have pretty similar teams. And they're in second and third, wildly enough. So, I know it was definitely an interesting weekend, though, for MotoGP. And I imagine that shows in fantasy. But Triple Three Racing, also reach out on Instagram at JK Moto Podcast. Send us a DM and we'll hook you up with your weekly winning in gold, if that's the color you so desire. I don't know if I have gold, actually. I can't promise that. But there you go. What a 2 weeks. We got to start in Aragon. We got to talk about some of the drama. But the drama didn't end in Aragon. I think the drama just kind of kept going. And I just want to say that we talk all the time about exciting racing. What?
Okay. I need the editor to lay down some magical music right here.
Okay.
He heard me. And he brought the magic back.
I'm glad you admitted it.
All right, back to Aragon.
I was gonna wait to get into it, but you're right, the magic is 100% back. I think we'll see. We'll get into that in a second, but anyway, before we get into that and the golden underpants and the magic that is and the how happy of a person I have been for the last 2 weeks, we have to talk about the drama and what last season, we literally went all the way up to the last race. And it was because both riders were doing pretty good. This season, it seems like neither of the rider actually wants it. Like, they do, obviously. Obviously, they do. But they just keep being like, nah, you can take it this week. I'll go wreck. Or I'll freaking pick up my rain bike for no reason. Which I'm not actually laughing about. But
that was awesome.
Anyway, in Aragon, I think the biggest moment, one, it seems like all across the grid, it seems like everyone's kind of starting to feel the bikes or get the bikes set up for them. We're at that point in the season where we're really just down to, okay, this is the last straw. Everyone get everything they got, which is weird because all the contracts are shored up, except for one, very technically, although we got a pretty hefty announcement this past weekend from the announcers of MotoGP that most likely Jack Miller will be sitting on top of a Yamaha next week or next year. So
I hope
Do expect that news later this week. They were pretty adamant about that. Apparently, it's all over the paddock. It is technically just a rumor, but it was a rumor from MotoGP, so I feel pretty good repeating that. But yeah, it felt like Pedro Acosta was back. The KTMs were doing pretty well. The only one that doesn't really seem to be sticking around is the Aprilias. I don't know what their issue has been or is or whatever, but they're just not there. But we have to talk about the incident. I want your opinion on the incident. We're talking about Aragon. We're talking about the race. I don't really have time to just talk about everything, but yeah, the incident. That's what I'm talking about, the drama, the incident.
Okay, so the drama, the incident, what you're talking about. We had the points leader at the time. Was he not?
I think Jorge took it by like 1 point the day before in the sprint, pretty sure. But yeah, whatever.
Horrible race for him by his standards. Horrible race.
Horrible weekend.
Yeah, bad start in the sprint. Bad start in the race. Coming from way back. Not coming anywhere. Just trying to hold on, really.
Mm-hmm.
During the race, it looked like he had finally found a spark. He was going to go try to make up a couple spots to salvage what he could salvage. Easily, anybody could tell he was on the faster bike. He was had the better pace at that point in the race.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trying to get past the other Marquez. Went for the pass. You could say, I don't know. So I'll just go out on a limb here and say what my opinion is.
Okay.
Do you remember when Bagnaia hit, was it Aleix or was it Vinales? I think it was Aleix.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just watching it was like, why did you do that to try to gain that one more spot? And whatever, and surely he's going to learn his lesson. And then there was at least two more examples where he's done something similar where you're like, why don't you just be patient? Why don't you learn your lesson?
Mm-hmm.
But in every one of those cases, including this one, I watched the replay probably 1,000 times.
Okay.
And I still don't know who to blame. The angle is so weird. He made the...
I don't blame either of them to a degree. I 100% don't blame Alex because I think at the time of the impact where Alex was actually looking, and I also saw Alex, you saw him kind of choke up on the brakes a little bit in the middle of the corner.
He stood the bike up.
Yeah. And it was too late, right? It was already there. I don't think he had the time to realize and be there. I also don't think, and there were in the interviews with the winners of the race, you know, top three afterward, all three of them were like, there's no way. No, he shouldn't have expected him to be there. He shouldn't have been there. Bagnaia should not have been on the inside. He had the pass. He could have just kept going on the outside line and would have been fine, right? Because he closed him off there, they were all in agreement. Of course, Mark is going to defend his brother, and he immediately was like, there's no way my brother saw him. No way. But Jorge Martin and Pedro were both just like, why was Pecco even there? Why did he take that line? And so I don't blame Pecco for running into him. I do blame him. I would put the blame more on him for closing that when he didn't need to. I think he closed that turn off more than he needed to. So like running wide is easier. You can have more speed. He was on the wider line and already had the pass. Very clearly on the faster bike, like you mentioned, he would have come out of there and just gunned it, gone, no problem. Why you close that off? Maybe, I don't know, you're a robot. You have to be on your line. I don't know. But I don't think he was in the right. The big issue and the drama and what everyone was freaking out about is that he immediately afterward got all I'm the robot and I deserve everything, which is one of the reasons I don't like him. And he's been showing that a lot this year. A lot of weird attitude things. But he came out and said it was 100% Alex's fault and he hit him and he shouldn't be blah. Just kind of went off the walls about it. Flash forward, apologizes about it, but I almost agree. I saw a lot of comments on this and everything else, and the internet was just like, Alex Marquez has never once, like, he might not be the fastest guy out there. And he's got a pretty big shadow that he's stuck in. So he's got to deal with that. But as far as like him and his composure on the racetrack and his composure in the paddock and everything that he's done has been nothing but stand up, good quality guy. So to say something about that, something like that about him, and then his comment back to Bagnaia was like, hey, thanks for the apology, bud, but you said it. And that doesn't go away because that's now in people's brains.
So let's go back. We don't have the verbiage. We're not going to put it up here. But Pecco never apologized.
Yeah.
For the incident.
Correct. Yeah, no, he apologized about saying it was Malik. Yeah, he apologized about saying it was Alex's fault. Yeah. He never took the full credit for the incident. So, which, as I said, I don't fully blame either of them. It's racing. It looked like a race incident. No one got penalized for it. I think there was the right decision and everything else. But I don't think it was anyone's fault. No one got penalized for it. And whatever. But to come out and be on that side of it. And I mean, it was a nasty wreck. That was the biggest thing. When that happened, I think I stood up on the couch. I was like, holy, I'm surprised he came out of there without anything wrong with him.
I stood up. I screamed a little. Because I thought for sure we had an ambulance coming on track.
Yeah. I mean, he was under that bike for like probably 20 feet. It looked like it. He kind of shoved it off of him.
Yeah,
so
that was rough.
Anyway, if you haven't seen those replays, go let us know what you think.
So, you
comment
know,
down below.
Not to make light of anything, but did you ever think that maybe Pecco's been hanging around with Mark too much and now he just thinks you can just run into whoever you want to run into because you are who you are?
I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of the guy's attitude. Never have been. Can't disregard his talent. It's there, 100%. Very talented rider. A few comments throughout the season.
Let's stick on his attitude and move to this week's race.
All right, sounds great.
I don't know that I'm so on the fence with Aragon. Like I don't know. I'm not taking it quite as personal as you from his comments and stuff like that. But I will say that I did take his tantrum this week much more serious. Because in the sprint race, he got beat.
He sure did.
And I thought he was going to throw stuff.
Yeah.
He finished second, right?
Second, yeah. Yeah.
He finished second and was ready to throw stuff because he had lost some more points. Felt like he should have won, mm-hmm. And that's great. I get it. But at the end of the day, there was, I mean, not a lot of sportsmanship being shown right there.
Yeah.
He had a super hard time even congratulating his fellow riders. I frowned on his attitude after the sprint race. And after the race, it wasn't much better. It wasn't,
and there was also another interview done with him where he said that if it weren't for the rain, there's no way Mark would have won. He would have been, he said something literally along the lines of like, he would have been minutes behind me or something like that. I was just like, okay, which I am a Mark fan, yes, but I don't care who won that race. Anytime you come out and been like, well, if it weren't for the rain, then learn to freaking ride in the rain better. It can rain. We're going to keep racing. That's part of the sport. If you can't handle it, like,
Or as a non-Jorge Martin fan here.
Yeah, I'm also one of those.
if he wouldn't have pulled off like a crazy person, then he would have won the race too.
Yeah, he probably would have won that. So, yeah. And, oh, man, I felt so bad for Jorge. When he pulled in, I was like, whoa, okay. And then no one else did at all. Because I was like, well, Bagnaia is just going crazy. I thought for sure everyone else is going to pull off. And then no one else did. I was like, what is going on? Then you get a couple in the back, and then Jorge comes out, and they're like 8 seconds a lap slower. I was like, holy cow. And then they're just talking about it stopped raining. It stopped.
I thought it made obviously they have whole teams of people watching the weather, trying to decide, mm-hmm. you know, trying to figure out what it's doing. In the time, I was super surprised that Pecco hadn't pulled off because it looked scary.
It did. I mean, they slowed down. I mean, obviously, Pecco was out there. He's the first one. No idea what the bike can do. No idea what the conditions look like. You don't. I mean, I can't even imagine trying to ride a bike on slick tires in the rain and still be competitive at all. You know, yeah. Like
it's, I thought they'd all made a massive mistake at the time watching it live. I thought they'd all made a massive mistake and Jorge was just going to destroy them.
Yeah. Yep.
And the race was going to be terrible, but and obviously it didn't go that way.
And then the rain stopped and poor Jorge. That was also super weird. First time I've seen a lapped rider in like what they were sitting in like ninth. Him and Vinales kind of still fighting, but neither of them wanted to go. Like, obviously, you don't want to mess with the people in front of you because. And I think Jorge did a great job, right? He recognized his mistake. Okay, I'll eat it. I'm not going to try and like get back through here and get everything I can, whatever. Just nope. Made a mistake. I'm going to live with it. I also think that after the race, the interview that I saw with him, it's like, yep, no, I made the wrong decision. My team and I didn't really talk about it, but that was on us. It was on me. I'm the one that pulled in. It was my decision. And a couple other riders also backed him up. They're like, the team can't say, hey, come get a bike. You have to come get a bike. It is purely on the rider and the rider's decision. That was the decision he made. And it was slippery out there. It wasn't like it was like completely dry and, hey, it might rain in the next lap. No, like they saw some wet. He's like, all right, cool.
Yeah, they were creeping for that whole lap leading up to that was unbearable.
Yeah, I mean, Morbidelli went down. Like
Morbidelli went down right before.
Wasn't
that.
Like it was free of anything. So, yeah, but I mean, it did open up an interesting opportunity. So, my boy, he won in Aragon after 1,043 days. Is the magic back? I don't know. I figured we were going to have a talk because he wasn't going to win this weekend. And you were going to be like, yeah, whatever, dude. He got the one because he's just super good at that track, which whatever. I could talk about Marquez forever. I've been talking to everyone at work about it because I'm super excited. The argument is that his team might have finally found out how to set up the bike to let Marquez do the special Marquez magic on the bike. I've heard some rumors, read some stories. The Ducati is a super easy bike to ride well. Marquez has a certain style of riding that he hasn't been able to unlock yet, for lack of a better words. And the team and him have finally kind of gotten to the point where they're figuring that out. And other riders commented and noted like, whoa, he's doing some stuff we've never seen done. He set a lap record. You know, Aragon was a perfect weekend. Lap record, top of every time sheet, won both sprint, won the race. Flash forward to.
Sorry, I got to cut in. But that's not the magic. That's a very talented rider with a very well set up bike out there killing it.
Yeah.
The magic I'm talking about, the magic of Marc Marquez is this week's race.
Yeah.
This last week's race.
Flash forward
to. No matter what happens, somehow that guy can magically find the front. No matter where he qualified, no matter where. That's how it used to be. That's how it was. You never counted him out of a race.
Yep. He could be injured, broken arm, qualified. There were times back in the day where he'd start from freaking pit lane and somehow
this had some of those feelings.
It did, it brought it back. And you know, shout out to your boy Jack Miller. I think he's got some of that rain talent. Sorry, there's a fruit fly in my face. I probably keep got fruit flies. Anyway, he was showing some good stuff in the rain. Brad Binder showing some good stuff in the rain. Both the commentators are like, yep, those are rain geniuses. And they're like, also Marc Marquez, rain genius. And it started to rain. And in my head, I was like, he's a genius at swapping bikes. That's what I was thinking. I was like, he's going to get in there, swap the bike. We're going to be great. And then he stays out. And I was like, whoa. At this point, I had still kind of thought Jorge Martin made the right decision. Obviously, there's the whatever. I was like, did Jorge Martin get the jump? I figured everyone was going to come around and get in the next lap / possibly maybe go down. Who knows? Like, it's sketchy out there. But here comes Marc Marquez. Almost looking like he's just wondering what the heck everyone else is doing, because he's literally, there were times where I'm like, dude, I was on edge. I'm like, you're not going to make it. You're not going to make it. He wrecked him.
Jack, like you brought up. They were both together.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, they were
on a different level. as soon as that rain started.
It was insane. It was insane. I have almost no fear with Jack on a Yamaha next year, because why not? Add another one to the list. I can probably ride it. But it was crazy. You know, Mark, when he wrecked in Q2, I was like, all right, it's gone. He got his win. That's great. Hopefully he can do great things next season. And, you know, you got to talk about the mental game, how much that's got to help. But then to back it up with another win the next week. And, yeah, sure, Pecco, if it hadn't been raining, he wouldn't have won. But it did rain, and he won. And it was some impressive riding out there. And the best part of it all is that on lap 20, after having wet tires, fighting from 9th to 1st, he set a new lap record on that track on a year-old bike. So, I don't know. I'm a fan, so I'm biased, but
yeah, I know.
We could be seeing shots of the future. Anyway, that's my take on Mark Marquez.
Even the announcers said, well, maybe this championship isn't over.
That I don't agree with. They said that in Aragon too, and I was talking to the wife. I was like, no, he would have to win every sprint and every race, and the other two guys would have to get 10th or worse the whole time. Like, no, sorry. He's up there. He's doing good. He won a race again. I don't know that he has something to give the 24s every week. I don't know that he's actually got the bike fully figured out for every track. I will admit, Aragon, he's great at. He figured it out. He's good at low grip situations and managing them. He's also very good now at, like, he's a seasoned rider, a seasoned racer. You can see that. You can look at the way that he rides and the way that he calculates and where he makes passes. It's a little different, which is kind of maybe why that magic has fallen off, because there's almost a little bit of hold back. I don't think he's going to win the championship this year. No.
I think what had more to do with it than anything was a beautiful white bike. Those bikes are sexy. I like those white.
They're cool. It kind of made me a little mad at first, because I was like, what? I can't tell who he is anymore.
I like they must have had some fairings they needed to use up.
Yeah, so they are back in Italy. Also, I didn't realize this, but they're back in Italy at the same track in 2 weeks.
Yeah, going back.
So that'll be interesting. We'll see. Maybe he can, you know, they have the test there also. Maybe with some data, he can stick it to Pecco in the dry. We'll see. It'll be interesting. But Marquez won after 1,043 days, followed up with a double win. That was super cool. The biggest thing, though, to me was like the weekend of Aragon, Pecco wrecks out, Jorge's looking like, all right, cool, I've got this in the bag, right? Like, that was a pretty big shot up. And then wins the sprint on Saturday. Great, good to go. And how fast things can freaking turn around based off one decision. And I do kind of feel bad for the guy. I don't blame him for making the decision. It's something that, you know, the weather is the weather. We try not to talk about the weather on this podcast, but it wants to be talked about, I guess. Because, yeah, I mean, as we already mentioned, everyone slowed way down. It got wet. You could see it. You could almost feel it watching them ride the way they were riding. You watch those bikes, they're almost freaking straight up and down going around the corners. Anyway. But yeah, so the championship, let's see, we'll go to standings. Lives on. We've got Jorge Martin still in first, 312. Pecco at 305, and then Marquez all the way down at 259. And he's still only 9 points ahead of Bastianini. So, like, I think we're ways off from saying he is technically, by math standards, in contention. Like, yes, he could still win the championship, but I'm not going to put that out there. But I think it has been great for him on the mental side, the emotional side, you know, going through so much bad.
Well, Pecco seems like on the mental side, he's about ready to lose it. So,
yeah, which he doesn't work as well under pressure, it feels like.
I don't know.
In a weird way, because sometimes he's like amazing.
The guy's really good. The guy's really good at, when he crashes, winning the next race.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when he's got to have it.
Yeah, and that seems like that's what pressure is, right? You got to have this race. You got to win this race. You screwed up last week. He seems to always come back. It's almost like when he starts relaxing, then he crashes.
Yeah.
So I think he's decent in certain types of pressure.
It's weird. It's a robotic. I call him the robot for that exactly. There's like a point where he loses the championship lead, and then it's like 3 weekends in a row he's just bang 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 bang, unstoppable, perfect robot rider, and I'm like, oh, okay. But then there's those times where it's like, you need to settle for second and be the robot and settle for second so you get points. And that's when that pressure he can't handle. And it just goes out the window and he's gone. So it'll be interesting to see. We've got a few rounds left. 2 in September, 3 in October, and 2 in November. So do that math and that equals 7. 7 rounds left. The next one will be right back at Misano again.
So we got that. I got round 5 of Utah coming up in just a few short days. A couple short days when you're listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
So excited. Excited for that. Finish out that season and then decide what's next.
There you go. Head for warmer weather? Question mark.
Oh, I'm sure. What else we got?
I think that's it, to be honest. I think that's all I got for this week. I think we covered Colorado in the High Plains Raceway, High Plains Racing, Legion Superbike. Hopefully you guys can work something out. We'll keep trying to push that for you. And if you're in that area or willing to travel to that area, let them know and then follow through and make it happen.
Yeah, so highly recommended.
Keep the clubs alive. And that also goes for any other club in America or anywhere in the world, to be completely honest. I don't want to just single out Legion. I just know that they, as he mentioned, inaugural year, haven't had the best showing. So if you can support them, head out, enjoy it. Keep the clubs alive so that we can continue to enjoy
racing them all.
Yep. Yeah. We'll travel. But yeah, that's all I've got. Do you have anything else, Cole?
Nope. That's all right.
Sweet. Well, we'll thank you all for listening, being here with us. Once again, at the end of the show, don't forget, subscribe to the channel. Tell your friends. Spread it around. Pretty good show, I think. Let them know. But we appreciate you guys listening, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.